Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Kia ora, welcome to the Aotearoa Rugby Pod on Sky Sport and rugbypass.com. And boy, oh boy, did we have a golden weekend of Super Rugby. The boys are fizzing. James Parsons is fizzing. Bryn Hall is fizzing because he got a win in overtime. And it was just an amazing time. Tell me, both of you, start with you, actually, Bryn, seeing as you won it. Are you a fan of golden point extra time?
Well, obviously, we were very fortunate to come on the good side there. But look, I think as a consumer, it's pretty, if you look at the two results, both going to golden points, it's pretty spectacular watching if you're a viewer. So, you know, we're fortunate enough that Davey got the drop goal in the last few minutes. But, you know, I even look at the Chiefs game and Anton Leonard-Brown getting the position for win, the golden point for Damo to try and get that kick in the end. So, no, it adds to it. And I think actually probably in our game, the positioning of winning the coin toss was massive. It was a bit windy in Wellington, so to be able to get those, to win the toss and to be able to have a preference of which way you go, I think it is a massive event on who, you know, has the advantage going to that kind of back end of the game.
Coin toss, so we're talking about getting field position over the ball.
Yeah, so did you choose to kick off or did you choose direction?
No, we lost the toss. We lost the toss and James Blackwell, he ended up deciding which way to go, but it's quite funny, if you're watching from where we were watching, the wind actually changed in the last probably 10, 15 minutes where the way we were going in the golden point, we actually ended up having the wind. So whereas in the first and second half, it was going the one other way, away from the changing room, but which way we were going, it ended up changing in the last probably 10, 20 minutes. So for us, it was massive.
The way I saw it in both games, the team that kicked off, actually both of them got the first lick at trying to win it first. Mm. Obviously, the Highlanders sprayed it wide and then the Chiefs went down and they won it through that turnover of Anton. And then you guys, obviously, with the charge down through Dunshay and then Havili. So it felt like that field position of kicking off is actually more of the priority so that, you know, the team, you can put that exit pressure on and then you potentially get yourself in a position where you can work towards the drop goal or at least put that pressure of maybe forcing a penalty or something like that. That toss is massive when it comes to that golden point.
It was really interesting listening to the conversation in the Highlanders game where Aaron Smith was asking the ref, OK, what does this actually mean? Summing it up, watching his brain go over it and go, actually, we want them to have the ball at that end.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I think it's a little bit different, obviously, down south when there's no wind. But I think your point's pretty crucial around there because I think if you end up kicking it long and if you do have a breeze, it's actually really hard to get out. And, you know, I felt sorry for, obviously, the placement halfback that came on and Mitchell Dunshay, who's done that a lot for us this year, putting pressure on box kicks. It's really hard. It takes away that pressure for us. So you kick it long, you're in the deep end zone. And if you can make a play like that, a charge down, or if they want to run it out two or three, four phases, you've got an opportunity then to get a breakdown penalty or we put it back all the pressure on them trying to get out of the exit zone. So we were fortunate enough that happened and then we were fortunate enough that Davey ended up getting that drop goal in there. But yeah, it was really good. You know, the first time it's happened and what a great way to do it, two games in a row.
Yeah, I get your point that you feel for him, but I might just come in to defend him because I commentated a few games of his when he played for Counties. He's got a big future, Roy Garda. I think he's, you know, he's a live wire. We spoke about him earlier in the year when we were talking about that battle for the Hurricanes 9 and I was really excited to see him go. And he made a good fist of it, you know, the charge down the side. So, and I think the game, you know, probably should have been put to bed, to be fair, before going to Golden Point. So I don't think it all falls on his shoulders. And it was a big play by Mitch Dunshay and someone that's fighting for a spot, you know, two All Blacks, senior All Blacks playing really well. And, you know, your captain and Barrett and The ex-captain in Whitelock, he's putting his hand up. And Quinton Strange, is he fit and available for selection? I mean, the depth is pretty impressive in that second row there at the Crusaders.
Yeah, he is, man. I think Quinny picked up injury a couple of weeks ago, but now he's really ready to go. And look, I think it just comes back to the competition. You know, you've got two outstanding All Blacks that are playing really well, Scooter and Sammy Whitelock, and you know, Mitchell Dunshay coming off the bench. He's been outstanding. There's been a lot of times in our games where he's actually ended up getting points for us after the games with his performances because of how well he's played off the bench. And again, we've got Quinton Stranger, who was selected in their All Blacks team last year in front of Mitchell. But then again, the competition with those two boys, you've got to be on your job because, again, if you get given that opportunity, you know, a guy like Quinn, who's played really well and, you know, was based and put in the All Blacks last year, he's just unfortunately hasn't had the opportunity due to our locking stocks at the moment and how well they're playing.
Let's talk about the drop goal, because I remember at a moment, Richie Mwonga ended up at the bottom of a ruck and you guys are in the right end of the field. And I was thinking to myself, oh no, he's the wrong guy at the bottom of the ruck. Next thing you know, the ball's in David Harvili's hands. And I was like, oh, actually, that guy can do it too. And then next thing you know, he slots it. What is the thinking there? Was that just a, hey, we've got two guys who can do this, so we get into position and get one of them in the right place?
Yeah, I think ideally we would have loved to have Richie in that position. But again, I think it was good realisation and heads up play from Davey, understanding that that Richie wasn't available there. And then, you know, I thought Drummy did a really good job of being able to manage that. And our forwards did really well just to be engaged and to give the perception that we were going to run the ball. And then it gave Davey that little bit more time where he wasn't under that much pressure and actually had a really good look, being able to get the ball with time. And again, with that time, he was able to get a really good strike and then went pretty much straight through the middle.
Man, I give you guys too much credit. I was sitting there going, oh, they're so smart. They're sending Richie up there. Makes the Hurricanes think, oh, well, their natural drop kick is in that ruck. They've planned to put Harvili in there because he's probably practiced the drop kick. This is what I'm thinking, yeah. Is on the couch, and it's not even that at all. Hey?
Oh. No, it wasn't. I wish I could back that up, mate. But no, it wasn't. It was just a heads-up play. And, you know, you do go through those kind of situations throughout the year. And, again, you want to have Richie, who's probably done a lot for us at training. But, again, Davey's got a great skill set around his kicking game, and he slotted in really nicely, being able to see with Richie being down on the ground.
I think that's his personality, though, isn't it, Davey Harvili? He's sort of the guy that will just take it on, that sort of challenge and step up, and he's that relaxed sort of customer. And I think it goes to show, I suppose, what he means to your team, how quick you all swarm to him. And he was just in the middle of that celebration. It was a pretty special moment for how hard you guys fought back to get that result, because again, quite a high error rate for you guys, and something that I no doubt you'll be looking at, but that ability to fight back, another massive defensive error, and a massive defensive effort, high tackle count, desperate to get back and work for each other, similar to what we spoke about the week before. And then the way you swarmed to him, it was good to watch.
Yeah, it is, and I think it's good because I think Davey has that kind of personality where he enjoys those big moments. And you know, I look at that final last year for Tasman when he played against Auckland. He was a guy that really stood up in those kind of moments, and he loves being in that moment. You know, Richie talks about it a lot. He loves thriving in big games like that, and I think Davey's exactly the same. He loves being a person that's in that moment to be able to step up for the team. You know, he loves the team. He loves Tassie, and he loves being a Crusader, and that's probably a reason why, you know, he's our vice captain, and you know, he's playing out of position as well. He hasn't played in 12, and being able to make those decisions selflessly for the team, and he's put himself in a really good position, I think, to be in the conversation for the midfielders. I think with his performances, not only on the weekend but throughout the duration of the competition. So now he's massive for us, Jip, and you know, we're really looking forward to seeing how he goes throughout the year for us.
Is it his rugby IQ that sets him apart? Because one of the things I noticed in that game was whenever there was a break, whenever there was a ball put in behind, the person who's there cleaning it up is David Harvili. Like, he's seeing things ahead of everybody else.
Bits and pieces. I think his preparation is massive around that. He does his due diligence through the week where he's really clear. And then his biggest attribute is when he's decisive. That's when he makes really good decisions. And those things that you talk about, it's not luck. Just coming up with where he's around the ball. He's very similar to Will Jordan. Will Jordan has that kind of ability as well to be around the ball. But, I think the biggest thing with Dave is it's been that transition from fullback to coming into second five, which I think has been massive for him. It's been great for our team. And the greatest thing that I think that Davey has is he has the all-round game. He's got a great distribution skills. He's got a great kicking game, subtle touches, and he's got really good decision-making under pressure, which if you're looking at attributes for a 12, it's at the next level, those are the kind of attributes that you need. And look, he played that a lot when he was younger. Yes, he was successful probably the last 3-4 years being a fullback, making that transition, but you know, he's got that understanding and has a pretty good knowledge around what it takes to be a 12 because he played it early in his career at Tasman and earlier at the Crusaders. And again, it's just going to take him time to be able to understand, to get back in the saddle to what it is to be a 12. But I think all those three things that I've just talked about has been a massive influence in our game this year.
But do you think his fullback, his ability for the fullback, because he seems to have a knack of getting that backfield cover for those short kicking games, and he does, he sort of preempts it. Is that just because of his natural ability to understand that backfield positioning and where the difficult spots are for that kick area? And you know, it's hard to get there for a nine, or it's hard for a fullback when he's a little bit deeper positioned, or, you know, sometimes your wingers like to be quite high. A lot of the time he almost preempts and drops back into that, those sort of challenging areas where they were dropping little chip kicks in yesterday, and he catches things on the full, but he's making those movements early as he sees them shaping to kick. He was impressive in that all-round ability defensively yesterday.
Yeah, I think it does, Chip. I think, you know, having that ability to have a pretty good understanding of what that pendulum looks like within our team, and I guess the having George Bridge back as well with the communication skills really helps with that as well. So we've talked about a lot on this podcast around the understanding of everybody has a job to do in that pendulum, whether you're a winger, nine, fullback, and have an understanding around that. And the thing with Dave is that he preempts things and he sees it play out. And that doesn't take, it's not really something that comes natural to some people, but for Davey, he's just got a good understanding with rugby IQ and seeing people's traits, whether that's someone that's really flat or they're showing their hand a little bit more with being able to be a bit deeper or flatter with little kicks. So I think it's an understanding of being in that positioning as a fullback and having an understanding of what the wingers are looking for, and then again having the conversations with the midfielders and being in that position now where the space could be vulnerable for our team.
So does him playing at 12 help him make the All Blacks stripper?
I think so. I wrote on my book yesterday 10, 12, 13, 11, 14, 15. I feel those are all positions he can cover and play. So it has to.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You know, warrant a squad selection, you know, like if you're a player that, I know 10's a push, but he has played 10 at Mitre 10 Cup level, and he has played 10 for the Crusaders, I think, but he does even slot in at first receiver a lot. But all those other positions, I know 13, not as much, but he potentially might get a run there now that, you know, I don't know what Jack's injury is like, but if he doesn't come back in time. So I just think he just has the ability to play across that back line, only barring one and a half back, but I'm sure he could probably make a good fist of that as well. So I think having that ability to cover that many positions, he has to be a squad member for sure. And the ability that he's shown for so long to play at a high standard, it's not just this year. He's done it for a long time. The only thing that slowed him down is injuries, and then, you know, the unfortunate thing that happened to him last year that slowed him up as well. So, you know, you'd have to think he's right in contention to be in that All Black mix.
He's got a lot of Charles Piatau about him, you know, having all of those skills. One of the things with Charles Piatau is, like, how do you fit him into the 23? Where does he go within this 23? You want him somewhere, but how? Where do you think, Bryn, he fits into an All Black 23?
Well, I think versatility is a massive part of that. And I think, you know, with the other, if you're especially number 23, you need to have the ability to play multiple positions. So, you know, traditionally, you've got a guy that can play centre or winger. But the biggest thing that Dave has is that he can play across all positions, like you alluded to, Jip. So I think having that versatility in a squad, whether, you know, it warrants a starting spot at 12, who knows? You know, don't know what's going to happen through the rugby championship and who's going to be selected. But I think the fact that he can play multiple positions, it's going to help for him being able to be that number 23, or he might even get his merits on starting through his performances.
Could you afford to have him and Damien McKenzie on the bench together if you needed, you know, an out-and-out 10 cover, if McKenzie was the second-best option there at 10?
I think so. I think Damien's starting to really show he can come into a game late in that 10 spot, especially if you're given the platform. I know we're jumping to games here and we'll get to the other game, but the Chiefs are really starting to get back to that dominant breakdown. And when they're playing flat and fast, he really comes into his own and he's starting to really get some confidence and light things up. And he's getting his distribution game going. If you look at Angus Tarvell's try, you know, and you know, probably what we saw, I know it was a match winner against the Blues, but it was probably on to distribute there. But he's starting to grow and grow in confidence, and that ball he gave to Angus was another step forward into that sort of 10 pivot role when he gets on that front foot.
If he was to be a 12 at test level, the person I suppose he has to get it over is Nani Lamape right now. Nani had a hell of a game.
I'm glad he backed up our chat. I mean, we pumped him up and he delivered for us. He just ran with purpose. And I use his try as the example. You know, he came back on that line and no one was stopping him. He was scoring that try. There was Crusader bodies there to stop him. But he, and I think it's his emotion he shows after scoring, what that team means to him. And their leaders across the ball, Colsey, Artie was massive, you know, Nani was massive. I thought Julian was massive. Geordie Barrett was massive again. You know, but between Nani and Geordie, the pressure they took off young Love, huge, I thought, and Campbell to an extent as well. They really just owned it. Their leaders just owned that game and really put the pressure on a quality Crusaders side. And that's what I meant, you know, when Nani scored, it was like the five of them got together and said, if we own this and deliver, the rest will follow. And it just looked like they were men possessed. And he certainly was on all cylinders. And he has been all season. I mean, that's why we spoke in depth last week. But again, backed up with a big performance. The other guy that I really liked, and because of Nani's form, and we're starting to see why he warranted All Black selection, was Umanga Jensen. Starting to see those unders line again, Bryn. I don't know if you noticed it, but just before Jack got injured, that late undercut, and that's what we started noticing, and that's how he got those All Black selection. And again, he was doing it late in the game, and we're starting to see him find form. So he then has to come back into the midfield selection mix as well. And he's got a great link game. He knows how to have those subtle touches on attack. And defensively, sometimes their rush D wasn't as connected as past weeks. I know I've spoken at length, you know, positively about their D. I think Cody Taylor threw an amazing ball to set up Bridges' second try, which, you know, if you are short of centre, he could probably play centre. he's playing that well at the moment. But apart from that, they were, you know, defensively they are, you know, really sound, those two. But I think the ability, and I suppose the leadership and the follow me attitude Nani's happening is bringing the best out of the people around him as well.
Yeah. He's into everything, good and bad, eh? And I think people like that about him.
Yeah. Well, he wants the Hurricanes to do well. He wants it really bad. And I don't think he can knock that.
I think the great thing that you brought up there, Jip, was the distribution ability. Like, I think Nani obviously talked around his try and he won it on his one, and nobody's really stopping him from our team. But I think the subtle touches that you've talked around, we know that he's a ball player, he's a ball carrier, but a little subtle touch to Peter Umanga Jensen into that space.
Nice.
You know, we had David Harvilli and Richie were thinking, obviously, he's going to carry, and then Jack had to come in from a long way, and he gave that little touch to obviously go through, and that's where Jack got injured. But it's that subtle play of, you know, you're going to think I'm going to ball carry, I'm going to give that nice little tip because I've got two players on me. and I'm going to put someone else through. And that's what you need from a 12 at the next level, which we've talked about a lot, Jip. But yeah. I think one thing that the Hurricanes did really well as well, you talked around their line speed, they put us under a lot of pressure. Like, again, there were a couple of times where there was actually a lot of space outside. Their wingers got really high and shutted off Richie and Davey a lot, where there was actually probably 20, 30 metres if we ended up getting it over the top, but we couldn't. And that probably actually went into a lot of turnovers. Like, our breakdown wasn't great. You know, we had a lot of opportunities where we were getting in behind them, but then, you know, our cleaners were winning the race and we were just getting a little bit behind and we're stunting our momentum through the breakdown pressure that we got. So I think we gave away 14 penalties and we had 22 turnovers, which isn't, you know, some characteristic for us, but it seems to be a common trend that we're just not winning at the moment. And so we talk around being ruthless and being able to build pressure. We're just letting teams off the hook because our breakdown's probably just killing us a little bit more due to that pressure, I think, on the weekend with those Hurricanes boys getting so high and being able to let us go back inside when we were getting hunted.
I just loved how late Mwanga was playing. Like, he's ball in two hands. I've got it here. Sorry, bear with me. 37th minute. He's ball in two hands and he's almost getting tackled and he puts it onto the foot for Sevu to chase. And if Sevu didn't give that penalty away when he, I think he pushed Barrett early or something. But if you go back and watch that, it's incredible how he's getting tackled and he's deciding to kick it. And he's still got the ability to pass it as well. You know, that isn't, like, that's hard for defenders. You know, the winger's having to commit because he's been tackled.
Yeah.
So you think he's not going to get this kick away. And he gets the kick away, and Sevu's, you know, putting great pressure on. And the lateness and his ability to have ball in two hands, he's also got the strength of a fend. I mean, he's playing as top of his game, and also when he's injecting into the line and punching between defenders and, you know, getting those big cutout passes, you know, although it wasn't as clinical as you boys would like, there's so many parts to your game that are going really well, and then you've got that fight. You know, we talk positively about the Hurricanes as well. There's so much, you know, that is going well for you boys to stay in this contest when, yeah, it's a high error rate, but to fight your way back from that. And, you know, Richie talks about wanting the big moment and, you know, and the big occasion, and, you know, when he does that, when it's the big test match. To me, a performance like yesterday, to orchestrate, to come back, and when it's, you know, it's not front football, it's a little bit more bobbled, and he really has to chuck the team on the back, that for me is, that was a great performance for me. Like, I thought he was exceptional.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jip, and that's probably, we're lucky that we have him down here, because I think, again, in those moments in big games where, again, we didn't have it all our own way, we had a lot of errors, a few penalties against us. It's similar situations like that where he's a triple threat. You don't know if he's going to kick, if he's going to run, if he's going to pass. All those options are what you're thinking when you're defending him. So, you know, for us moving forward, you know, we want to be able to give him as many opportunities as we can to be able to, you know, have those opportunities. I look at that second try when we've talked about it a lot with him out running out the back, and then he gave that ball and Cody Taylor did a great pass to be able to put ball away. But again, the more opportunities that we can put him into space like that, it's hard to defend. You know, I look at Damo. Damo was very similar on the weekend when he set up that try for Angus.
Yeah,
they ended up running that shape that they've got. They've got that dummy cut, and they hit Jacobson off that, you know, because he was running it at pace. And then the second phase hit it off the nine, and then he got it out the back, and then he hit Gus. So, you know, whenever you can get guys like that have the ability to be a triple threat, it's always tough. But I guess our challenge for us moving forward is to be able to win our breakdown. Like I've said, we're giving a lot away, stunting a lot of our momentum due to our poor breakdown. So we run against a pretty good Chiefs team that, again, are really good at the breakdown. So, you know, if we don't get that right, then we're not going to give Richie or a lot of our guys that play really well with front football.
Let's look at the opposition 10. Reuben Love, 19-year-old, prefers fullback in the most part from what I've read, goes in at 10 in his first game and immediately looks like he's the kind of guy who's got the confidence to make this happen.
Yeah, he's definitely had the confidence. I spoke about Nani and Jordy taking the pressure off him, which was great. The one thing I liked from what I saw is when he made that break up the middle of the field, it showed to me that he had done his homework and his prep. The fact that he'd made a great line break, and it would have been so easy to go, I'm in open space, this is my chance to shine, but he put it on the boot And we spoke about Mitch Hunt's kicking game against the Crusaders last week, putting it in behind them in the 22, trying to put that territory pressure on. And he put it on the boot and the exact same thing. You know, they put it on, it went out. And, it, you know, for me, that was smarts. You know, rather than getting overawed by the big occasion, first start. And that's when I thought, you know, he'll go a long way because he's got the ability to stay composed on a starting debut in a big moment. It was early on in the game.
Yeah.
And it was a bobbled ball and he took off and it could have easily, you know, been a moment where he tried to do something too much, but he just took the option that obviously had been prepared really well during the week and nailed it. And I thought that was a telling moment for me of where he was at as a player and his head was at. And then the other one was how willing he was prepared to throw his body on a loose ball. You know, it shows a lot about a character of a player, I reckon, if you're prepared to dive on a loose ball. He's not a big body. And, you know, there was a lot of other, you know, red jerseys trying to go for the same ball. And he was prepared to, you know, put his body on the line. So there was a lot to like about what he put out there. He didn't get to touch the ball as much as he'd like, I'd say. But that was a strategy, I think, of where they wanted to go. And it was working for them, so they stuck with it.
Is that what you expected from him?
Yeah, obviously we didn't know too much about him. But again, we're pretty lucky that we've got Tommy Ellison with us. And he gave us a few insights around what his common trends are. But I think the biggest thing that I enjoyed about him, and Chip has you know, brought up some really good points, but his ability to attack the line and to really ask questions of us defensively. And there was a play, they didn't actually end up scoring from it. It was probably just before halftime. We ended up holding up the ball and where they didn't score points off that. But you've got a team that can really attack the line and imposes questions. And I'm not to say that obviously Auburn Ledger didn't do that in his time there, but I just found that Ruben really attacked the line and asked us questions where we had to hold ourselves and actually count him as a defender, count him as an attacker, sorry. And so Chip has alluded to all those points around him making really good decisions in his kicking game. And I think the fact that Geordie and Nani and Luke Campbell as well, you talked around Chip, actually took a lot of pressure off him and actually helped with him with that game management. And I think probably moving forward, you know, it's not traditionally his position that he plays, but if those guys can continue to make good decisions around him and let him express himself when it comes to that attacking ability, and no doubt we'll see that more coming forward if he is selected at 10, because I think having that ability, like no different from Richie and Damon on the weekend, having a 10 that can take the ability and ask questions of the defense at the line opens up a lot of opportunities for other players to be able to go through as well.
And if he wants game time, he's going to have to accept that he's going to have to play at 10, because Geordie Barrett's not moving from fullback.
No, he's not. But he does look quite comfortable at first receiver a lot of the time too. Mm. So he's going between the two, similar to Damo. And they are quite, you know, a transfer role like these days. You know, Josh Ioane and Mitch Hunt go between the two when they're both on the field as well. So it's pretty like for like. Mm.
During the Hurricanes' best years, with Bowden obviously there, one of their strengths was the ability to take on the line at a moment's notice and go. And when that went missing, it kind of hamstrung them for a couple of years.
Exactly. And I think Bryn's key point there was you have to defend them. And the reason you have to defend them, it's the pace. So it's when you've got that speed and they can just take off and go, you can't afford to not be on them. So it's when they're flat and fast, and if they've got the ability to just go on you, you can't be switched off. And I think Ruben Love's got that edge of speed about him, and he can really leave you looking silly if you don't stay on him. And I suppose that's probably to Bryn's point, as a defender you just have to be wary of him. And if you just switch off for a second, or you're more worried about the person outside him, he'll take you on, because he is courageous. He is. That's one thing I picked up, is he's full of courage. And he'll back himself.
One of the things about when management picks a 19-year-old, though, is that how do you manage it? Because he's going to have a good game, then he's going to have a bad game, he's going to learn some lessons. Yeah. Bryn, how does their management look after him best over the rest of this year?
Well, I think the biggest thing is that they've done it before. And what I mean by that is if you look at TJ Perenara and Bowden Barrett when they first came in, you know, they just finished under-20s, and you know, they gave them the keys to the car. And so what that means is that, you know, they're probably not, don't know how long Garland Bishop's out, and obviously Simon Hickey's going to be out for the rest of the year. So he's probably actually going to have a lot of time in the saddle to be able to learn and to go through those experiences. And the biggest thing is that you just back him, keep backing him. And I think for the fact that if you give him that confidence, then you're going to get some moments like you did on the weekend where we've talked about his speed and his ability to take the ball to the line. But then, you know, you don't obviously, game management wise, there might be a few mistakes that happen, but that just comes part and parcel with time in the saddle. So I think they've done it in that club before with TJ and Bodie, and just been able to give them the keys to the car, and then you can just let them run with it. And you know, I guess the teething problems that will come with it, you just take it for what it is. And especially with a guy like Ruben, who's only had one game at first five, but you know, if that's his first game at first five, I'd hate to think what he's going to be like, you know, 10, 15 games in. So I think give him the confidence, be able to play it, give him the learnings that he needs to with his game, but and just let him express himself and he'll figure it out with the more games he plays.
Now, the other guy who was epic for them on the weekend was Adi Savea, and gutsy, so gutsy. I mean, he looked like he was down and out. He was thumping the floor. You know, who knows what that injury is or how long it might or might not keep him out, if it does keep him out. What do you do with Adi Savea in that kind of form, playing on a bung, whatever it is?
Well, we discussed All Black captaincy a week ago, and you know, we talked about first year as Kane's captain, but a performance like that and the want and desire that he had for that team, you know, puts him right in the mix there. You know, maybe an All Black leadership role, you know, a fill-in, you know, while Sam's away, potentially. Like, I don't know, that was a man possessed. His work at the breakdown, his work around the field off the ball, his carries, his post-contact meters, his quick hook and go work. Now, I think they needed to use this more. They used it early in the game. It was a quick hook and go, and he made, you know, 25 metres open side. And you know, I've spoken about Hoskins and the way the Blues have used it, and you know, they use it a little bit at test match level, probably haven't used as much as they could this year. It would be good to see that, but when they have, like, it's been effective. And then, sorry Bryn, but they used it again blind side against you, and it ended up leading to Wes Hoosen's try. And it's hard to defend, because it's like you've got all your systems, and it's like you see the ball go in, and the next minute they're there, and you're like, oh, you know, you like, it's a weapon because it takes a weapon away from the Crusaders, because the scrum is the Crusaders' weapon, and you know, they started the game taking that away from them, and then they, you know, spiced it up a little bit later. So, you know, his all-round performance was great. The tactic around the scrum was great. You know, his line-out work's really improving. And, you know, his captaincy, his captain's challenge, the way he's discussing with the ref, his tone, is exceptional. You know, he's really growing that part of his captaincy as well, for, you know, really quickly. And it looks like he's, you know, he's just naturally doing it, and it's not that hard a job for him. And maybe it's something he probably should have done a lot earlier, because he does look like a natural captain. I don't know how you feel, Bryn, but that's my take on it. That game really stamped a mark for me on Artie and where his I suppose, future captaincy can go. And he, I think he's going to be a long-term captain in New Zealand, the length of stay he has here.
Yeah, I think you're right, Chip. I think you talk around those scrum opportunities. It's so hard to defend, and I seem like I'm going to be a meme for him my whole career, because he just keeps getting...
It's probably my fault for saying you got him three times in the last game, and I was celebrating.
Well, that's it, mate. Honestly, it's a guy like that, he just, you know, those kind of scrum situations where he can, well, that scenario was a little bit different. They were kind of wheeled, and he ended up coming my way. But I know the one you're talking about around the first scrum opportunity, where it was a quick hook and he got on the outside, and actually Ruben Love ended up getting the ball and making little inroads there. And so, again, it's really hard to defend. You've got such a great ball player like that. And, you know, I think for us, you're talking about his leadership, Jip, and, you know, he was consistently in the ear of the ref.
Awesome to see.
It was, mate. And I think for us, you know, as a player,
it's crusader-like.
It was just, you know, very frustrating. It was frustrating, but you know, you're talking about leadership style and have been able to be a tone and be able to understand of how the game's going and been able to communicate to the ref. He's been doing that. He did that really well on the weekend. And for us, it was, for me, just as, you know, being able to watch it play out in front of me, it was frustrating. And you don't think about it too much. But again, when you've got that captain that can make decisions and talk to the ref in a tone that's going to benefit your team, you know, it adds to how good you are as a leader. And so, you know, for me, what kind of symbolised that game for me was after when he came off, and I know he had his knee strapped and he was hobbling off, and you know, the whole Caketon was giving him a standing ovation, and that kind of just symbolised the performance on the weekend. It was tough. It was just a performance where, you know, you want your captain and you want your captain to play like that. And so, you know, hopefully, fingers crossed, it isn't serious because, you know, for the Hurricanes, they need him and he's been doing great things for them. But I think at the next level with how he's playing, especially with Sam Kane going out and having his injury, he's probably our number one seven moving forward. So, you know, fingers crossed it's not too bad because the performance like he has on the weekend, and that's only going to add if he gives him that chance at the All Black level when with Sam Kane being out.
Yeah, fingers crossed, because that's the kind of performance that for a guy like that is iconic within his team, iconic within his franchise. It's a Richie with a broken foot, you know, players with a broken rib, torn scrotum level. You know,
I was going to say, was it the performance of the campaign so far?
Yeah.
Across all the games, probably by an individual.
Considering,
I mean, there's been some great games, but I think most people thought the Crusaders would bounce back, you know, viciously. And that the Hurricanes, you know, just got together with their five key leaders, and the five of them were awesome, but he was right at the pointy end of that triangle.
It was a hell of a game.
It was a great game.
Entertaining.
Oh, it was a great game.
This episode of the Aotearoa Rugby Pod is brought to you by Manscaped, the Lawnmower 3.0. It's version 3 of their system to make sure you don't get nicks and scrapes and tugging and all the things that could affect you when you're cleaning up downstairs. If you go to manscaped.com, use the code RUGBY, you'll get 20% off. Use that code and you'll always have the right tools to do the job. Boys, this weekend, any hairy moments for you in Sky Super Rugby?
Oh, I reckon Colsey got this turnover and he came up quite happy, and it looked like Dave Harvilli, and he had a few kind words out there, Bryn. I don't know if you were close to it, but I don't know if you'd want to get on the wrong side of Colsey if you were Davey.
No, there was some nice length. There was some nice words there between the two. I can't say on air what it was, but probably two guys that were just seen locking eyes and really enjoying themselves in that moment.
It was great viewing. The Sky camera crew did wonders for my enjoyment on the couch.
Mine was actually Paul Williams, unfortunately, get on the wrong side of Alex Vito. Part of the game. I think we actually ended up getting a penalty from it, but yeah, he obviously wasn't looking on his blinkers, on his blind side, and yeah, he actually got put down pretty badly. But like the tough character Paul is, he's up and having a wee smile, but obviously a little bit of a hairy moment for him. Maybe he might get a Manscaped kit for that.
100%, a very hairy moment. Now, just like Aotearoa Super Rugby, sometimes you've got to know 90 minutes, and with the Manscaped Lawnmower 3.0, 90 minutes of battery life can get you right through if you've really got a lot to get through, boys. A lot to get through in 90 minutes.
Brenner?
Well, look, fortunate enough to have that, you know. 90 minutes, geez, what a treat. Absolute treat to have 90 minutes of your battery power.
I think it'll get everything done for you. So make sure you get online, go to manscaped.com, use the code RUGBY. It's waterproof. You can use it in the shower. You can get 20% off. Make sure everything is clean downstairs and you'll be looking bloody good. It was a very good game. The other game, the Chiefs Landers, probably wasn't quite of the same quality or quite as entertaining, but the climax again, going into that golden point extra time. Personally, I wasn't a fan of golden point extra time to start with. You know, I quite like the idea that after 80 minutes, if two teams are even, well, they're even. But after watching those two games, well, I was kind of like, I like it.
I was always a fan purely because you don't go out there to draw. Mm. That's I think as a player, and now even still as a retired player, you don't go out there to draw. And the water cooler chat would be going off, you know, especially if you're a fan of the losing side and a fan of the winning side. Either way, you're going to be looking at it. You know, purely you look at the Chiefs Landers, the Chiefs got out to a hot start, and you got to admire the way they've fought their way back into the season. We talk about the Hurricanes leaders and Crusaders leaders, the way the Hurricanes ones stood up, the way the Crusaders ones fought their way back. And then, you know, the way the Chiefs leaders have just reformed their season, fought their way back. You know, the guys like ALB, Luke Jacobson, Weber, McKenzie, again, four key players that really delivered on the night, were crucial in big moments. got out to a hot start, but then, you know, guys like Aaron Smith, Shannon Frizzell fight their way back into it. Josh Iwani, Mitch Hunt, you know, might not have had the stellar game that was the week before, but stayed in the fight, you know, even under tough circumstances, he stayed in the fight and still, you know, orchestrated his team back into a position to take it to 23-all and give his team a sniff. And I think those are the sort of moments and those are the characteristics that everyone can get behind. And that's what I enjoyed about that game. And, you know, even Angus Tarvell as well. Sorry to miss him off, because I think, you know, that type five's really starting to muscle up in the Chiefs as well. And, yeah, it's good to see, I suppose, that comeback sort of, you know, because I know they keep saying it and I think they're going to keep saying it for the whole season because they'll try and live on it. And Bryn will be able to jump in here, but no one's giving us a chance is what they keep saying. But like now people are giving them a chance. And I think we've been giving them a chance pretty much since round one or two. We've credited them, saying there's been a big shift in their standards. But now they're a genuine threat because their breakdown, one, they're getting their set piece right. This will be a big challenge, line-out time this weekend and scrum time. But their breakdown, the vicious cleans, the quickness of the ball really allows Weber, McKenzie, Anton into the game. Quintu Paiao, I hope he's not too badly injured as well. He obviously went off, but he's, you know, he's a key cog because he's coming into his own. He's starting to really play to that, you know, Bunnings NPC form at super level. And then, you know, you've got the back three with Nano Satoru, who basically sidesteps raindrops in a spare time. You know, and Sean Stevenson coming off the bench, Jonah Lowe. So they've got enough of a nucleus in the backs, and that's probably where they had it over them. But now they're getting their game going. They're really starting to hum. Highlanders, I know they're disappointed, but they've always got that fight in them. They just didn't. Their kicking game, they didn't kick as well as they'd like, or they just it just wasn't as evident. Their tactically wasn't as evident in the past, but the one thing I did like, it was the most innovative I've seen them from set phase this season, which I really like because that's what we know Tony Brown for. And it felt like that, you know, it was really exciting. They'd worked out a few things in the Chiefs and you know, that excited me from a viewing point of view.
Yeah, particularly a play. There was a wee trick play there, Brendan.
Yeah, it was nice. Jimmy Lynch's one. That was really good. And I think it's pretty common. It's a common way. Not down the blind side. A lot of teams, which you would know, like most of the New Zealand teams, end up having that little bus, you know, 6+1 bun to play with the 7 in the back, and then you send a guy down blind, you actually end up going open to where the transition, to go in the transition. But the thing I liked about that is that there was actually a lot of cogs in that wheel with that move. If you look at the play, Jonah Nariki's on the outside flying into that transition zone where normally if you're looking at the Highlanders, that's where they're going to attack with their special players. And then Shannon Frizzell as well, paying to go to the open side, took Brad Weber, because obviously Brad Weber was thinking, oh, they're going to go open, which is pretty much all you would have seen through the preview if you preview the Highlanders. And then Jimmy Leach is the big, best dumb I've ever seen him do, probably in his whole career, and then going down the blind side. So, yeah, we've talked about the innovation, especially with that try. But then I even look at one of the tries that they scored. It was, who was it? Just bear with me. Shannon Frizzell, his ability to be able to go through the line. I don't know if you saw that, Jip. They actually didn't end up hitting. If you're looking at the three forwards that they usually hit, they ended up hitting very similar to how the Hurricanes hit. They hit the third forward, had the down line, and then it's out the back. And Shannon Frizzell went through that. He actually went through Brad Weber. But again, it was just the innovation and being able to play the team that they're playing. Like when they played us, they ended up going down the short side, holding on to the ball. And then on the weekend, they had a little innovation around their faceplate attack, which, you know, Tony Brown's seen every time he plays. And so I think their preparation was good around that. But I think the difference I found was probably in that first half when they played us, is the points that they did get in the first half, they were rewarded. Because I found in that first half on the weekend, you know, Mitch Hunt obviously missed those two goals and weren't able to get the points that they deserved and have that scoreboard pressure that they built against us. So that was probably the little bit of the difference between when they played us and I guess when they played the Chiefs on the weekend, not accumulating those points they did early on to have that scoreboard pressure to then put them under pressure like they did against us the previous week.
Yeah, and I think also the accuracy of their kicking game as well. Like they just seemed to pin you guys all the time and it just felt like you were always running backwards. They just didn't quite have that same accuracy or the amount of kicking in the first half. But to go back to Jimmy Lynch's try and I think it was Aaron Smith's try, where Frizzell goes through that hole, I think you're right, and the homework they did is the Chiefs are renowned to want to win races. So everything's about winning races around the corner. And both of those tries are about coming back against the grain. And so the Highlanders were like, OK, well, we're all about faking to go open. And, you know, Bryn talked about, you know, Nareki going there, Frizzell going there, and then coming back about Lynchies. Well, it was the same. They threw over the back of the line-out, and Gregory runs hard into that transition zone again. And then all the Chiefs are trying to fold hard, and then they come back with a nice pass, and Aaron Smith, and they give that short ball to Frizzell, and then Aaron Smith on the inside for that try. But it's a big body against Caleb Trask and Brad Weber, because all those forwards are trying to win a race to get, because they, and it's a work ethic thing. But again, Tony Brown and his coaching group have done their work around that preparation, and that's where, you know, that sort of, you know, Chiefs mentality is a strength, but sometimes it can be a weakness. And I think, you know, obviously coming up against the big boys this weekend, just want to get that balance right and make sure they get the right bodies in front of the right bodies, if you know what I mean, and don't leave their little men against big men and get isolated.
How much, Bryn, do you guys take note, let's say, as a Crusaders team, of watching an innovation that Tony Brown comes up like that with? And how much use can that be on a week-to-week basis if the Chiefs have obviously seen it as well?
Oh, I think it's massive. I think, you know, a lot of teams go through their preparation around teams they play, and I think the biggest thing is being able to execute that. So you do your preview, you do analysis for the week, but I think the biggest thing around it is you can have all the plans in the world, but you've got to be able to execute. And Jippy, you brought it up around the breakdown. You know, if I look at their Chiefs on when we play them on the weekend, you know, they're brutal at the breakdown. So, again, it's going to be a big challenge for us. And, again, it's just knowing that you've got to be able to execute. You can have all the plans in place, but if you don't execute your role within that move at that time, you know, then those things, those tries that we've just talked about, they don't happen if everybody doesn't nail their role.
We talked a little bit about the drop goals earlier, but while we're on the execution topic, there were a lot of drop goals in both games. To what degree are Kiwi sides training drop goals from your experience, Jipper, and training getting into the positions to take drop goals?
Yeah, well, I can only speak from a Blues position, and it was something we did train around tactically, making sure we knew what we wanted to go to, what position we wanted to get to, but more importantly, how we wanted to position ourselves to, one, provide a little bit of a shield for our kicker. You know, if a situation like on the weekend, if the kicker's not there, who's next up, things like that. So it does get trained. I think sometimes players will keep their cards close to their chests and play a little bit dumb, I suppose, and say, oh, no, we didn't train that, or things like that. So we're at too high a level not to consider that.
You practice it you go through those scenarios. You know, it's not every week, but again, you know, there's different scenarios that we might find in the game. It might not just be a drop goal. It might be we need to get a try, or we need to get a we need to hold onto the ball, we need to kill the game, or scenarios like that. So, yeah, we best prepare as best as we can, and those conversations and those scenarios are definitely done in training.
The Springboks are pretty good at drop goals.
They are.
Now they are preparing, obviously, for the Lions tour. I read this week that Bristol is a place where they might get all their internationals together to do some alignment camps.
Yeah, if they're allowed in.
If they're allowed in and allowed to. Everything's against them, isn't it? Like, it really is. But in a way, that's the thing that the Springboks always respond to.
Yeah. Well, I think that's where they're going to base themselves once they've played their first three rounds before the Rainbow Cup.
Yeah.
But their alignment camps are split up. So they're doing the Sharks in Durban, Stormers in Cape Town, and then obviously the Japanese players are doing via Zoom, and then they've got someone based in the UK to do the UK. So it's all a little bit separate, but I think it's quite good because it's basically you cover your logistics, you get a lot of your game plan imprinted, you get your language, so you can wipe off so much, you know, sort of admin stuff, and you get a lot of your knowledge down into your books, and you can learn a lot of stuff, and then, you know, at that level a lot of players would be visualizing and can start thinking about it, so that once they do get together they can actually hit the grass and start, you know, running these things pretty much straight away, and, you know, there'll be a lot of excitement about it. And I suppose they will get some play in their super sides and club sides, and then when they come back together as a South African side, it won't be as foreign. Hard to know how they're going to select it, because, you know, they haven't seen a hell of a lot of footy. And so I think there's a lot of excitement for the players in that sense as well. So if they're invited to these Zooms or catch-ups, you know, you're a real chance to play a Lions tour for South Africa if you perform for your club side. So, one, you'll be attentive and you'll be getting everything down. And then it's literally roll your sleeves up, perform. And if you're a form player, you probably got the inside running of selection, because you've got to pick on form, because probably runs on the board are not going to matter as much because there's been a year in between playing, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So there's so much on offer, and if you've got a low amount of caps or a high amount of caps, it's probably not going to matter as much as it normally would. There'll still be needed to be experience and things like that, and you will get, I suppose, reward for that. But there's more opportunity than normally there would be, I reckon, in the current setup.
Oh, that's interesting. Because the other school of thought would be that they haven't played in so long that you just go straight back to the 2019 stuff and repeat it.
I know, but if you watch the Six Nations,
yeah,
the teams that did so well were actually the teams that probably had the most exciting game plans and the most flair. In conditions that sometimes were wet, and, you know, I know they're playing in a set every, so it might be a bit, I don't know what the conditions will be, but, so, you know, you're going to have to, I believe, there'll be a lot more innovation, whereas if you looked at 2019 World Cup, it was quite a forward-orientated, tactical kicking game plan, physical, dominant display by both sides. I feel that maybe that's, sort of, probably changed if you looked at going based on the Six Nations. You know, Wales were really innovative and changed. France, you know, although a little inconsistent, they were, you know, exciting to watch. Scotland, you know, playing really, you know, keep the ball alive sort of footy, chip and chase. Some players, you know, great over the ball, the wingers. So, yeah, it's really hard to comment because we haven't seen them play for so long.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm trying to work out how the British and Irish Lions will play based on what they've seen out of the Six Nations and who they're going to pick, and you know, what's the best situation for South Africa to run with, you know, because I think form has to count. Form does have to count, and there is going to be that Rainbow Cup with the South African sides coming over. They'll play each other first, and then they're coming over, hopefully based south in Bristol, and play in the Pro 14 there, and that'll give them a great opportunity, one, to get against some opposition, but two, for the selectors to see some guys play.
Razzie Rasmussen and Krubrin must have to watch a lot of footy. It can't be that easy. You know, if you think about Ian Foster, he watches two games of footy a weekend, and that's really what he needs to select his team. Razzie Rasmussen, he's got to scour the world.
Yeah, but these guys are code heads.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, it's tough. It's not a perfect world. Like, the last time the South Africans played was in 2019. You know, I think the fact that they are having camps in different parts of the world, it's the process that they have to go through. Look, they're at a position where, you know, the British and Irish Lions tour is just around the corner. So, you know, these kind of just brought up a pretty good point around being engaged, and, you know, they don't really have any days that they can afford to miss. So, the time that they do spend together, they've got to be able to make that happen right then and there, because again, the fortunate thing that even though the British and Irish Lions haven't been together, you know, the other teams, you know, they've played two Six Nation competitions. So you talk around innovation, Chip, and, you know, you look at Wales and Scotland, for example. My biggest thing is, you know, are they gonna have enough time to innovate in such a short amount of time? I think, you know, you do have campaigns for the Six Nation teams, and even look at this rugby championship teams, which actually be able to play at test match level, to be able to understand, will this work, won't this work, whereas the South Africans, they haven't played for so long. And so it's going to be really interesting to see how they are going to play. It's going to be tough, because again, they are codeheads, and they'll be able to have as many Zoom meetings. But yeah.
Don't you have to think, like, we've got to give Rusty a bit of credit. Like, not a lot of people gave them a chance at the World Cup, and this guy, I mean, if anyone can do it, he knows how to build a campaign.
Yeah.
And he knows how to build a campaign using a backs against the wall mentality. So I think he's had a lot of time to plan, and he'll have a really clear idea of the personnel and the characteristics he'll want in his squad, and that will be the people he's already got in touch with for these camps or these Zooms or whatever it is, and they will go away from these camps, alignment camps, are they? Alignment camp with a really clear picture of where their game's at, where they need to be playing, and how they need to make the squad. And all I'm saying is, if you're a young guy, that's got to be exciting because it's a one-off tour. And if you're an experienced guy, you'll know, you know, you're going to have to lift your game and do it for your country. You know, like, there's just so many things that will bring the best out of people. That's, yeah, and I don't know. It would excite me as a player.
I agree with those, with that. I just think the question needs to be asked around, you know, time off and not being able to be together. I think they'll go through their due diligence around preparation, and, you know, they're a proud country, and look, you know, they're world champions for a reason, and, you know, we talk about New Zealand being so supportive of us as a rugby nation, you know, South Africa's in the same, or probably even more, with their supporting system. But I think for the fact they just haven't played a lot of rugby, the question has to be asked around, you know, are they at a disadvantage? The fact that they haven't played a lot of test matches, and that's why I'm just coming back to the way that they will play. Will they go back to the end of how they've played? Will they innovate? Will they have enough time to be able to innovate against a pretty strong traditional Australian team that have played footy, not together, but they've played some pretty competitive footy in that Six Nations competition?
Yeah, well, there's some guys that are in the alignment camps that still played plenty of footy, you know, like there's guys overseas, there's guys in Japan. I just think, yeah, it's not, and there's still been some games within South Africa. Mm. You know, there's still been footy played.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, I mean, time will tell. Time will tell.
Exactly.
Yeah. Time will tell.
He's going to have his trusted people. I know it's hard because we haven't necessarily seen a lot, but guys like Hunter Pollard, Dwayne Vermeulen, guys that he knows can do the business. Do you expect any movement away in those kind of key areas?
I think he'll stick to his main leadership group and key players, but that's where I mean, I feel like there will be opportunity for form. Mm. So there'll be slots, there'll be guys that will be in already, I'd say, based on fitness, making sure that they're fit and still obviously perform to an 85% level in the upcoming games. But I feel like form, there will be space for form players to get in as well.
Above all else, I just want to see Cheslin Kolbe again. Like, he's so good to watch.
You speak about innovation, you wouldn't know what he's going to do, which way he's going to step, sidestep, chip and chase. So, I mean, and they do have a lot of talent. And so do the British and Irish Lions. So, although that, you know, they haven't played a lot together, I still think they'll put together, you know, a great campaign. And it's not like they're going up against a sole nation that has played together a lot. Like, let's not forget the British and Irish Lions are putting a mixed squad together as well. So that has to be factored in. Mm. You know, like, it's not like they're just going up against England or the All Blacks. They're going up at a squad that has to gel and be moulded together as well.
And if you think about that tour to New Zealand in 2017, the first test, they were nowhere near the side that they were in the second or the third. So maybe the South Africans have to hit them hard and hit them early, and that's their opportunity.
Yeah, but then the South Africans might grow as the tournament goes on as well.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.